If you've already hit it once, I guess it's, you've already hit once, so it's blinking.
Alright, time to begin. Actually, it's time to do it. We're even late for us. Which is like 12 hours. Everybody doing well? Good. I'm doing okay. We spent every day spending lunchtime at the hospital with my sister. Hoping she'd be going home yesterday, but she didn't. So we'll wait and see what says Monday. So. Apparently the pain medication they gave her didn't sit well with her, so she hadn't eaten since Tuesday. She hadn't wanted to eat till yesterday. She said, that's a strange feeling. You don't want food at all. But other than that, her spirits are in good condition. She smiles, she laughs, she jokes. We got her up and walking yesterday, so Judy came back home, which was an excitement. Kaylin and Jack weren't that happy about it, so they had her all week. I'm going to continue our discussion this morning from Pagan Christianity on chapter 2, which is about the Oedipus complex, our obsession with buildings. We know we have an obsession just by the terminology we use, right? We will intellectually say we don't have one, and yet our terms are what? We go to
church.
Isn't that a beautiful
church?
You better behave in the Lord's house. I love to hear our kids on the bus say that, because when they say, you can't say that, you're in the church. I said, if you can't say it here, you can't say it anywhere. Because what is the Lord's house?
Us is the temple.
Yeah.
Slash church building.
Technically, we are, right? So wherever you are, that is the Lord's house. So you can't say that in the Lord's house. So therefore, you can't say that. But they have the same belief that most of the world has. That once you step foot inside the door, it's different. We have to behave differently in church. To which I agree. Yes, you do. Once you are in the church, you should behave differently, right? The concept is, what is the church? To many people, it's the building. Now, we all know that's not what it is. What is the church? And the church answered, right? Us. We are the body of Christ. We are the church. We are the temple. The thing that got the Jews the most angry, the reason they started the process to have Jesus crucified, was when he said, I'm going to tear down the temple. God never wanted them to have a temple. Who wanted to have a temple? David. Why did David want to have a temple?
He wanted to be like everybody else.
He wanted to be like everybody else who had one. His actual comment, if you want to read it in 1 Kings or 1 Samuel, was, I live in a very nice house. Why should the Lord live in a tent? Because I have a nice house. God has to have a better one. God allowed it. He also allowed them to have a king, but did he want them to have one? No. Once there's a physical location that we associate with God, our attitude toward him changes. Where did God ask Abraham to worship? Was there a specific location? Why not? Where was the church building Adam and Eve went to? Because if you look at the relationship they had, they spoke with God. Literally, one-on-one, right? God spoke to Abraham. God spoke with Israel, Jacob. God spoke to the patriarchs. It didn't change until they came out of Egypt when he set up the Levites to be priests. He said, I'm going to speak with this group of people. But at that point, what else changed? Think for a minute. Difficult concept because it's the first time in history it happened. God separated one group of people from everybody else. For what reason? Not because they were better than everybody else. Keep reading the Old Testament, right? Why did he separate them? So they could have their own tabernacle? There's one reason the Jews were separated from everybody else. Starts in Genesis chapter 3. It finishes in Acts chapter, or actually the end of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John.
That would be Jesus' lineage.
To bring Jesus for what reason? To start his church. Jesus didn't build a building, did he? Anybody remember from last week, when's the first time we read about in history a church building for Christians?
300.
Roughly 300 years after Christ was crucified. And the turning point in history that caused that was Constantine, the Roman Empire. Now, many people believe he was the father of the church building. And his reasoning was he wanted Christianity to be legitimate. He wanted them to have the same rights and privileges under the Roman Empire as any other religion. Stop for a minute. When has God wanted his people to be part of the mainstream like everybody else? That's the correct answer. Never. And yet, the reason the Christians of the 3rd century agreed with Constantine is because they wanted to be accepted. After 200 years of persecution, they were tired of being persecuted. When he said, I'm going to make you legitimate. You can own property. You can have buildings. You're going to be tax exempt. They jumped at the chance. Oh, by the way, is that whole concept biblical? That churches are tax exempt?
No. In fact, it says give Caesar what is Caesar's. And that was also taxes.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate control.
That is the ultimate control.
Ultimate control.
Our government still uses it.
I mean,
yeah.
Well, I would think by now I just was ignorant and did not realize that if you did talk about politics and things like that from the pulpit, that they could pull that. I didn't know that until recently.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like, well, I think churches should be so repulsed as to the point of saying, "We'll take our tax stuff then. We'll just pay taxes, but yeah. we're gonna talk how we feel biblically. You know, fine, we'll pay taxes on the whatever."
Yeah, you can't tell us what we believe.
Yeah, God should provide anyway. We should have faith that God would provide.
He'll probably provide us much better than that 10%.
Yeah,
that we would pay in taxes if we were truly be His children the way He wants us to be.
What happened to freedom of speech? You should be able to do that anyway, right?
Hey, freedom has a consequence.
Yeah, that's true.
So therefore, yes, you have freedom of speech. But not if you yell fire in a crowded room.
Unless there is one. Then you say twice.
You can see throughout history how we've fallen into a trap of sounding like everybody else. How many of you would feel comfortable to walk into a congregation that met in a metal building, strictly just one of them old metal buildings thrown up, with metal sides and a concrete floor? Would you feel like you were in a church?
That's what I grew up in.
Yeah, that's what
I
went to that one too.
And they built one 10 years ago and built another metal building.
No, I mean, not a metal outside. I mean, the shed that you put the cows in.
Oh.
The strictly metal walls, metal studs, nothing. Because I promise you, in Syracuse, it's not just that. They did something to spiff it up.
They painted the walls white.
Yeah. And I'm going to get to that one in a minute. But that's not what we picture most of us, right? When you picture a church building, if somebody said, describe a church building to me, what would you do? Because almost all of them have the same features. Think, every church building you've been in, I don't care which religion it is, what are in all of them?
Pews.
What else? There's a big meeting room. Yeah. What else? You missed the obvious stuff.
The stage.
The stage.
With the podium.
With a podium on the stage.
The
what else?
Table in front of the stage.
What's on that table?
Communion table.
What's only on that table?
Communion.
Nothing else can be on that table, can it? Mm-hmm. Except the little baskets for the offering, which we elevate to the same status as that.
And a little tablecloth.
Yeah, you can't be without that. By the way, if you take that off, people really get upset.
Yeah, some people get upset over, like, what kind of...
We tried it 1 week. We took the little thing off the table. You would not believe what hubbub occurred about the little rug that wasn't there. What else? Because obviously we all know there are certain things you have to have or it's not a church building.
The baptism water...
Not every church building has one of those, but it predominantly do. And where is it always located?
Right behind the gate.
I have been in one church building that I know of
Tuscaloosa.
That put it in the lobby. It is not in the main sanctuary because they use it for a multi-purpose room. They have video cameras and they display any baptism on screen. The baptistry is in the lobby.
Maybe a steeple, but I guess not all buildings have.
But for hundreds of years, all of them had to have one.
Yeah.
We're getting away from that now with current architecture, but up until the 1920s, there wasn't a church building built that didn't have a steeple. Mm-hmm. What color are they inside? You ever see any red, yellow, or purple?
Yellow.
I mean, like canary. Bright yellow.
Pale. Everything.
They're all pale pastel colors. And how is the lighting inside?
Funeral home.
Indirect.
Uplight indirects. Yeah. Do you know that every one of those things you just mentioned is intentionally done for a reason? One of the architectural maxims when they go to architectural school is that form follows function. You design a building for the intended purpose. And then you go ask the people what that purpose is. What are your expectations for this building? And then you try and create a building that generates the atmosphere, note that word, that they want. Because we all have a belief on what a church building should be. And most of it starts right back in AD 300 when Constantine built the first building. Because he used the type of structure he was used to. Being the Roman emperor, he was used to Roman court. And so he was used to a basilica, which was the Roman court building. You know, the Roman court building is almost an exact model of our church auditorium. And most every church auditorium. It was a large open space where the people could meet. In front was an elevated platform. On that platform was a large chair. And beside that were two smaller chairs, maybe three or four, depending on how many magistrates sat next to the chief magistrate right in the middle. Does that sound like most stages you've seen in the church? Almost every, we got rid of the chairs. We had one big chair and two little benches. And then you have an elevated podium right in the middle of it, right? All of the seats face which direction? Straight up front. You know that each one of those words has a meaning? The fact that it says podium. You know what it is? It's obviously from Greek. It means to elevate. The person that was on it was supposed to be elevated. Above everybody else in the room. And it sat on, oddly enough, we changed this word, the pulpit. The pulpit has come from its original meaning, pulpitorium, it's the stage. Intended for, and if I used it as that word, stage, what do you think was going to happen there?
show.
Yeah, a performance. The people sat in after the 8th to 9th century. Before that, they didn't sit in anything. They stood the entire time. Unless they were in a window, right? Acts. It was sitting in the windowsill, and about midnight, he fell out. Before that, they stood. And then they started getting stone benches. They were not fixed to the floor. They'd bring them in and out whenever they wanted them. The stone benches went to wooden benches because they were easier to move. They didn't have backs on them until the 14th century. The pew, we know, didn't happen until the 14th century because they didn't want them to be comfortable. Oddly enough, what's the primary focus most people look for in a church auditorium?
Padded seats.
Padded seats. If I'm not comfortable, I can't worship. And I would beg to say, if you are too comfortable, you can't worship. If you are more worried about your personal comfort, you are not worried about worship. And yet, the other side of that is, if you are in excruciating pain, there's no way you're going to worship either. Oddly enough, both sides of those have been thoughts of the religious community at some point. There was a whole group of believers that thought if you didn't constantly put yourself in pain, because Paul said, I buffet my body daily, they would walk around with whips and whip themselves in the back as they walked, because they didn't think they could keep their mind focused on God unless there was some reason they had to. I'm glad that group died out. I'm also glad the group that said you have to separate yourself totally from the whole world to be truly religious isn't, because that's not what he wanted either, right? You have to live in the world but not be part of the world. And yet we accept so many things that came through history related to certain parts of our belief system. I mean, we talked about it before. What's the first thing that happens when a group of believers get together? You hit a certain number, what are they immediately thinking they have to be a church? A building. Where did the first century church meet? Actually, no. Not first.
Oh.
So first reference we read, Acts chapter 5. Where is it?
On the porch.
They met at the porch of the temple.
Yeah.
Why did they meet there? It's the only place big enough. How many of us have a house that all of us could get together in one room? I don't. So therefore, out of necessity, you know, I don't think having a church building is necessarily wrong. What I think we need to get out of is the mindset that it's sacred. For many years, the very word, and I'm glad I didn't hear the one you all use, is I heard an auditorium, which that word by in and of itself means we are going to a performance. I'm going to listen to someone, it's going to hear what has to be said. I'm not going to participate. I'm going to be spectator. Which is all comes from the Roman Basilica. You keep the masses as quiet as possible by presenting them a building that sets up a sense of awe and wonder so they don't disturb the peace.
They also had a fence or a gate.
Oh, they had a fence between the magistrate and you know, a lot of churches still do, the older buildings. And I haven't built one recently that still has that, but a lot of them have that separation of the clergy from the laity, because you can't have those two cross. But we know that's not true either, because who is the holy priesthood?
We are.
You are. Christianity is the first religion that did away with a separate priesthood, that did away with a separate location for worship, but did away with one location that was sacred. Go look through history and try and find another one that said you worship God where you are, individually, one-on-one. The relationship is yours and yours alone. Go to any culture you like. Hard to find. Almost impossible. But each one of those things we mentioned earlier, the stage was intended to elevate those on the stage because they were the important one. The people were separated. They all faced front. They had to watch what's going on, intending to keep them docile. How should we be learning God's word? If you wanted to learn the way Jesus learned, how would you learn it?
By hearing.
By hearing, and actually there's more to it than that. Paul, when he studied, was a student of Gamaliel, one of the rabbis who taught. A rabbi typically had 15 to 20 followers, disciples as they were called. Disciple was one who did not want to learn what the rabbi taught. He wanted to be the rabbi. His intention was to become that person. That's what a disciple truly is. I don't want to know what you have to say. I want to live what you do. Paul stood at the feet of Gamaliel and learned. The way they learned was the rabbi would throw out a question. The group of disciples would take that question, step aside, discuss it amongst themselves, and answer with a question. To which the rabbi would respond with a question. And this went on back and forth. The true learning process in Jesus' time, and still in most of the Eastern culture, is a dialogue. You don't believe that? Look what happens in most of the stories where people approach Jesus. What do? When they brought the woman who was caught in adultery, what did they do? What do you say? And his response was, who among you is without sin? Let him cast the first stone. Question. When they tried to trap him and brought him a coin, right? Or they said, should we pay taxes? And he said, you got a coin? Question. Right? Whose face is on it? Which they answered, and he said, okay, fine. You answer your own question. That's not the way we do it anymore, is it? When's the last time you felt comfortable in the midst of a worship service when a question was truly asked from the pulpit, not a rhetorical question, that you felt like, I can answer it? Even in a classroom setting, we are set up in such a way that I'm standing in front of you behind a podium. You are all down there on a lower level. It automatically sets up a teacher-student. It's almost an adversarial. There's nothing about me standing here that makes me any more intelligent, educated, or better answered or prepared to answer the question than you are. The only difference is I got over my fear and I'm standing here. That's it. The worst thing we can do is propagate a belief, and our buildings are designed to do it, that other people know more about the Bible than you do. So therefore, you have to sit and listen to what they say and don't question it. It's exactly what the building is designed to do. Right down to the lighting. I love it when Johnny said, why is the lighting this way? Indirect uplighting. Because the other thing that came out of history, roughly, there was a group of people about the 5th century that believed God is transcendental and beyond our reach. Therefore, the best we can do is be in awe of his magnificence. And so their answer to that was those huge cathedrals with the giant ceilings and stained glass. Because the color of the glass invoked a feeling in those people that were sitting there that they were in the presence of God. And yet, right outside their door, typically was the Alps or the Pyrenees or some other true mountain range, that if you want to see God's magnificence, look around you. You don't need a piece of glass. Just look at the earth He created. But the idea was, the building should give you the feeling of awe. And then once you walk in the building, you put that association to God. We literally put God in a box. Because do we really treat Him the same outside the box? When we walk out the front door?
Do you feel like you treat Him the same?
I try as much as possible. Which is all you can do. Because I try not to call this a church.
Right.
It's the building. Because to me, it's a tool. This structure should be a tool for us like any other tool. If we cannot use this structure to improve our personal relationship with God, improve our corporate group relationships, or if we cannot help the kingdom of God grow, we're misusing it. How many of you would buy a house to go to 3 hours a week? Even if you had the money. I know some people who buy a house to go to once a year for a week. And they have an insane amount of money. I've designed three of them for them. Three houses, none of them under 9,000 square feet. Two of them they go to for 1 week out of the year. The main house they live in is 19,000 square feet. It has five washers and dryers. There's five people. 12 bathrooms. Five people. It has a 40-yard archery range in the basement, so he can practice when it's not deer season. Now think you've got a room, that basement long enough that you can shoot an arrow 120 feet. My house, if I put it end to end and added another one, is barely 120 feet. But we wouldn't spend that kind of money for 3 hours a week, and yet that's exactly what most church buildings are used for. Kind of a misuse of the Lord's money, if you look at it. We should use it as much as possible for, and the same reason anything else should be done, for the edification of the body, right? It's not building us up, it's tearing us down. I hate to quote someone who's not religious, but sometimes they have some excellent quotes. Mark Twain said, anytime you find yourself standing in the middle of the majority, you need to rethink your position. It's very true. If you are finding your... everybody agrees with you, something might be wrong. Because the first century church found themselves to be outsiders in every case. Why? Because they did what God wanted them to do. Oddly enough, when you have peace, joy, love, self-control, the world hates you. You think they'd enjoy that. I'd love to be around people who are peaceful, who are joyful, who are actually in control of themselves. But when somebody does things that you know you should do and you're not, what to do?
You feel bad.
Nothing is worse than somebody that points out my own faults, right? I'm pretty good at pointing out other people's faults, but don't tell me mine. Because I don't want to really know what they are.
I went to dinner the other night with, I have a group of girlfriends. There's six, counting me, there's six of us together. We've been together for almost 30 years. We started in first grade together, so we have really deep friendships. And we're all sitting together in this little coffee house thing, and Guts talking about church, and two of them are members of a huge, huge, huge church up in the Hendersonville Church of Christ. One's a member at the big one at Woodmont Hills. One's a member at Madison Church of Christ. Then there's me, and then there's one that's a member of nowhere. She just doesn't go to church. And they got to talking. One of my girlfriends is the, what do you call it? The, not youth minister, but the children's ministry coordinator person that does all the whatever. She makes an outstanding salary doing it. And the other girl is her, my other friend is her assistant. Okay. And she got to just talking about the stress, talking about this, talking about that. And I said, well, when do you go to church? When do you worship? When do you, do this? She said, I went on a women's retreat one time, like 3 years ago. She said, that's the last time I can remember going and sitting and listening and worshiping. And it just went from one thing to the next. And I was just astounded. I wish I could reiterate what I heard. And she's doing this big thing that's coming up for Christmas and everything. And they're having an ice skating rink. Mm-hmm. They're actually spinning. They're having an ice skate, and I said, I don't want to start an argument. I said, but why? It's outreach. I said, okay, it's outreach. Who are you going to attract? Who's coming? He said, well, we had 2,000 people come last year to some kind of Santa thing or whatever, and it's mainly the people that attend there anyway. Mm-hmm. But just to listen to them and listen to the stress and listen to the lack of relationship with God, it was just astounding. And then at the very end of the whole thing, my friend that doesn't attend church, I talked a little bit about kind of how we do a little bit here, and I talked a little bit about this book and all that, and she leans over and she said, I think I'd like rather go with you. And I thought, I would give my eye teeth if you would come with me, to come. But she, and it was the most amazing thing. All the bells and the whistles and all the stuff, she was even able to differentiate between, mm-hmm. What in the world are y'all doing?
Sounds like the church in, like, the second letter of Revelation, where he's talking about the church that was doing all this stuff, but they had completely forgotten about God.
What's an ice skating rink? I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, silly.
What does that cost?
Well, I mean, it's the whole concept of when the cathedral started. And if you remember, where did cathedral come from? The cathedra was the largest chair on the Roman court stage. And so when the judge spoke, he spoke ex cathedra, which meant from the throne. So the cathedral was the building the throne was in. When we talk about a cathedral, we're saying that's the building, there is the throne. Well, whose throne is it? Most people associate it to the guy who sits in it, not the one it should be. Ultimately, we should look at, does anything we do help us grow as a body and help us grow individually? Does this promote a family, which is what we are, the family of God? I don't know when you all get together for Thanksgiving, but we do not sit in rows at Mom's house and not talk to each other. We do not get up when dinner is over and leave within 5 minutes. Now, I have to say, of all the people I could be talking to, this is probably the closest one to what I think it should have been in the first century that I've ever seen. And yet we should keep our eyes open as to why we do things and question, is this the way we should do it? Because I haven't seen many people get up and leave within 5 minutes or 50 after we're done. Sometimes. Most of us don't think the floor upstairs is sacred, which is good, because it's not. We don't think that making a change will damn us to hell eternally. Because some changes we've got to make. We've got to be able to differentiate between tradition and God's fact. Throw away the traditions that don't matter. Keep those things which are beneficial, because If we use any building the way it's supposed to be used, it's a tool. It will help us do the things we should do. It would be kind of tough to constantly say we're going to go meet under the trees at the park. Certain times a year, we'd have a lot of people. August, I'm not going to sit outside. The middle of December, a lot of people are not going to come, right? So having a roof over our head is pretty much a necessity. Having a space large enough for most of us that would like to gather is kind of a necessity. What we have to be careful of is we don't fall into the trap that that is where we worship, because that's not where we worship. That's where we assemble. Worship is not a one-hour-a-week operation. Worship is every moment you're awake, every breath you take, everything you do. Yeah, try to stay away from the lyrics. And stop for a minute. Comments? Questions? Trying to get a little interaction. I'm probably a little preachy again. I almost got to a sermon, right? Almost every worship you go to is a sermon. Look it up sometime. See what one of the definitions for sermon is. I found it most interesting. The first one is obviously a religious discussion, right? A exegesis of the Lord's word. They love to throw the big terms at you. The third one I saw was listed is a long, boring speech. Yeah, Webster. Love it. Because a lot of sermons, most people look at just that. Did you get anything out of it? It was useful. If not, it was just a long, boring speech. There were some sermons during the early church, because we know Paul spoke to midnight. We know that because one guy fell out the window because he fell asleep. But he only spoke that long because I'm about to leave on a journey and I won't be back for a long time. I've got a lot to say and I need to get it in now. Other than that, most of it was done interactively. So the next time the preacher asks a question, don't be afraid to answer. Not just rhetorically in your mind.
We can sum that Jesus set a precedent when he spoke. He taught.
He taught.
I mean, you teach. You're not, it's not a discussion.
It's not a lecture.
He taught. And he, the Sermon on the Mount. I know that what we see in the Bible is not necessarily exactly how it happened. It's a representation, you know. Somebody wrote it down. But at the same time, I can't see that being a huge discussion where when 5,000 people are sitting there listening to him, I can't see them all having a big discussion. I think Jesus did set some precedents on that.
Definitely did. All right. We've run out of time, which is another one of those strange things that we've imposed on ourselves. Through history, we have to limit the amount of time we spend with the Lord to a certain limit. But and just to be in convention with normal wisdom, it's actually 5 after 10, so it's about time. But if you have a copy of the book and you want to read ahead next week, it's one of those topics that can really stir some people up, the order of worship. Why do we have so many songs and a prayer? And then I didn't touch on one of the things I thought somebody might bring up. Why is the Lord's table in the front by itself with nothing else on it? I mentioned it, but nobody questioned it. You know what the history of that is? Constantine actually had an altar in the front of the church.
Yeah, right. Doesn't bother anybody.
A literal altar, which what do you do in an altar? Sacrifice. Because Constantine never quite became Christian. He kept a lot of his beliefs from his first belief. He worshipped the sun god. You ever looked at paintings or stained glass windows? What's behind Jesus all the time? You know where that came from? Look before 300 and see who had that. The Roman god that he worshipped is always depicted with the sun behind his head. When he moved to be Christianity, he brought that with him.
In fact, it looks like Jesus.
It almost does, doesn't it? So, another one of those strange things that, why did Why do we accept that? Because I promise you, Jesus was not a Caucasian. They didn't sit at a table at the Last Supper.
Yeah, right.
They were most likely on pillows reclining. Except Da Vinci couldn't paint it that way.
Yeah, I think this is what church.
All right, we're done.
This is what church. This is what it's for.